Hey, my name is Bex, and welcome to Getting Emotional. Every week I'll tell you about a brand new emotion you might have felt but had no idea there was a name for. This week, it's Faygo. Before we begin, a little bit of news. We got nominated this week at the British Podcast Awards in the Bullseye category, which I am absolutely thrilled about. So if you do follow the awards, make sure you see what happens, and whether we win, lose or draw, I am very, very happy to be nominated. Anyway, on to today's podcast. We start it with a geography lesson. For me, not you, because I am terrible at geography. Because to understand where this feeling comes from, I had to crack open an atlas and go down a few Wikipedia rabbit holes. Come with me while I travel to four little islands in the Pacific Ocean, known as Ifaluk. The islands belong to the state of Yap. That's one of four states that create the Federated States of Micronesia. You with me? Good. Ifaluk was known as a warrior island, and it's not exactly been plain sailing for the people there. As it's part of the Caroline Islands, a group of tiny islands in the Western Pacific, in 1899, its sovereignty was granted to the Empire of Germany. A few years later, after the First World War, that transferred to Japan. And after World War II, it was passed to the USA. Finally, in 1979, it was handed over to Micronesia. There's not many people living there. I think in 2000, the population was about 561. But it's fair to say, they've seen their share of history. The people who live there are pretty peaceful. Any acts of anger or aggression are actively discouraged, and their sense of morals and general respect kind of sets the tone for how everyone treats each other. Apparently, some American soldiers have tried to show them films from the USA, and the locals were horrified at the amount of violence they all contained. Don't get me wrong, they know anger can and should exist, but they only consider it appropriate if it's a specific type of anger. One that's justified and understandable, even kind of reasonable. There's a word for that type of feeling, song, which I'll no doubt explore in another episode. Children are also taught about another emotion, matagu, the fear of what an angry person will do. And women on the island are known to have dressed up as ghosts to deliver firm warnings to unruly children about the perils of anger. Sociologist Catherine Lutz spent a year on the island and wrote about her experiences in 1990. She noted that there was very little aggression between islanders. The only moment of confrontation she heard about, or even witnessed, was one man touching another man's shoulder, which resulted in a stiff fine. They also value sharing much more highly than I reckon we do. They would share a cigarette with a whole group, or divide a fish with as many people as possible. Everything's about working together as a team, even in language. For example, if someone was inviting you to hang out, they wouldn't say, "I would like to see you." They'd say, "We should do something together." To them, that's a much more inclusive and polite way of phrasing it. So yeah, to be honest, it sounds pretty civil, idyllic, and perfect. But there are a few quirks of the hierarchy on the island that we Westerners would maybe find uncomfortable. But hey, who are we to judge? It's just their culture is different to ours. But that's good, because it means they see the world in a different way. And as previously mentioned, with song and matagu, it means they've identified emotions and feelings that haven't really occurred to us. I mean, we've probably felt them, but have never even bothered to pinpoint them precisely. And today's emotion is a perfect example of that. Faygo. Faygo is a combination of feelings. Love, compassion, and sadness. It's most often felt, I think, when caring for someone. The idea being that you love someone and feel compelled to look after them, perhaps out of compassion or maybe pity, but you know this won't last forever, and they will eventually leave you. Maybe because they get better and stronger and ready to move on. Perhaps they'll pass away. Or maybe, I guess, you might leave them to go on your own adventures. I think it's often associated with childcare, and a feeling of being able to look after someone but knowing they might not want you there forever. I'm thinking of mums and dads who have to let their kids fly the nest and go off to university or get a job or get married and have a little bit of a sadness around them. But there's lots of other ways and times that you might be called on to care for someone. Perhaps a partner who's sick or a grandparent who is nearing the end of their life. Or maybe you're employed to care for someone, a little bit like today's guest.
My name's Bilal Zafar. I'm a comedian, and over lockdown I've become a Twitch streamer as well. Those are the two main things, and a bit of acting and writing, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've got many strings to your bow. I mean, the Twitch thing is, I find Twitch fascinating because it really has taken off. But of course, like you said, you're also a comedian by trade, and I assume, like most comedians, you're off to Edinburgh this year.
I am, yeah. All of August, doing the whole run, and I am, yeah, it's so the show I'm doing is called Care, and it's just an hour of like storytelling stand-up about a year I spent working in a care home for the elderly when I was 21. So it's my first proper job after doing a media degree. Yeah, and there's just a lot of stuff there. Like, it's in hindsight, I realize how strange the whole thing was, and even me doing that job was a weird decision.
I was going to say, it's a weird thing to fall into, especially, like, no offense, having done a media degree, I wouldn't have thought my first turn would be like, oh, I'm probably going to go and work in a care home now. That's odd.
But there's nothing to, like, if you do a media degree, a lot of the time, unless your parents know someone, there's not really a way in. I mean, I guess for some people there is, if they're quite clever, you can be like a runner on a film set or something. But I didn't really want to do that. So I didn't know what I wanted to do. Well, actually, I had just started doing open mic comedy.
Right.
So I thought, I want to do that. I had no idea if I'd be successful at it or how long it'd take or whatever. But yeah, that was it really. It wasn't, the care thing was never a career. It was like, I'm going to do this for now. I just thought I'd give it a go. I just thought it'd be quite nice. I didn't realize how bad the pay was.
Oh man, and
yeah. Like, well, when I say I didn't realize, I mean, obviously I knew what I was being paid, which was £6.50 an hour, but I didn't realize how much I was being ripped off because I'd never worked before. You know, you don't really know the value of money, really.
Yeah, sure. And £6.50 an hour isn't a lot. I mean, obviously, you know, adjusting and stuff like that, but still, I mean, that's quite a big responsibility for low pay, right?
It's weird, isn't it? It seems almost a bit dodgy that you'd pay someone with a media degree £6.50 an hour to keep people alive.
Oh my God, when you put it like that, Christ, it's almost like they were desperate.
Yeah, I mean, also, I talk about this all in the show, but like, I found out when I was there that some people were paying £10,000 a month to stay in the home.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So basically, it wasn't a normal care home. It was like a big American company that set loads of homes up in, I guess like, wealthy areas of the UK. So this was quite a fancy bit of like the Northwest, because they can, you know, they can charge people a lot of money. It looks really fancy. That's the thing. The building looks amazing. And they, you know, I guess they do have a lot of, I guess they got all the equipment and all of that is all great. And the food, I guess, is good. But they, you know, they advertise this as like a luxury kind of thing. But actually, it was me. Minimum wage.
Thinking like, whoa, where's my media degree? Why didn't I use that?
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh man. So tell me, like, walking in there, like the first weeks or so, that they must have been quite like overwhelming to get in there and just be like, what the hell am I doing?
It just feels a bit exciting in a way, being in the real world and having responsibility and having a little name badge that I had made for me and stuff. So it was exciting to do it. And initially, you know, you're shadowing someone and it is kind of fun in a way because you're getting to know some of the residents there. But then obviously when you actually start and it's like a 7 a.m. start and then you realize that the way it is that they give you just way too much responsibility as well, which I think is the case in a lot of minimum wage work, is that you're just given far too much to do. So like... something I talk about in my show is like there was one time where so because there wasn't a lot of male carers in the home, it was a massive building and I was one of the few male carers. I guess not a lot of men do that job. So the sort of managers decided that I was a good person to deal with, like if one of the male residents was having a bit of a problem, I was like a good person to like sort of deal with it. So like there was one morning when a man was quite, I guess he got quite anxious and he got quite aggressive and he'd thrown a mug at one of the carers and it just missed her. And they said to me, oh, can you go in and calm him down? And I went in and he was holding another mug in his hand.
Oh my God.
So it's like an active sort of shooter situation. But they didn't tell me that, you know, and obviously I wasn't trained to deal with any violent stuff at all. I guess it's difficult, especially when there's, like, because obviously we had a lot of people with dementia
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really train for that because it's so random, you know?
Yeah, yeah. How did you feel like walking into those situations? Were you just like, I would feel so overwhelmed with dealing with someone with dementia or dealing with someone about to throw a mug at me. Or are you generally quite a calm person? Are you okay just being like, okay, this is the situation, let's see what happens next?
I think you just have to get on with it, right? You know, once you're there and it's happening, it's like, well, this is it. And also, like I said, I was quite young, so I was 21, so I didn't know how mad this situation was in a way.
Yeah.
You just kind of go with it. But with the dementia people, it's quite interesting. It's like, so we had like a top floor, which was all like, it had to be like, that you needed a code to get in and out. It had to be really secure. I think there weren't any TVs upstairs. There were no calendars or anything because you couldn't show people what year it was.
Oh,
wow.
It
might confuse them. Yeah. And, you know, there were people that thought I was like their cousin and stuff.
Oh, right.
And
yeah.
You kind of have to go with it a bit, you know? Like,
yeah, I've heard that you have to kind of lean into it a bit.
A little bit, yeah, because you're not going to say, like, if someone, you're just trying to help someone eat or, you know, help them go to bed or whatever. You don't need to say, no, I'm not related to you. You're in a care home. You're 90 years old. You know, you wouldn't do that. That's ridiculous. So, you go with it a bit. Like, there was one night when there was a group of ladies just sort of hanging around. So it's like the way the top floor looked as well is like, it was quite an interesting design because it just felt like a kind of massive sort of living room.
Mm-hmm, okay.
I guess it was meant to look kind of homely, right? So that people feel calm. And there was a group of ladies that just wouldn't go to bed. And it was like 1 a.m. or something. I was doing a night shift. And one of the ladies, I realized after talking to her a bit, she thought it was her house, the whole building.
Right.
And she thought I worked for her. And again, you just have to kind of go with it. And there was another lady who was sitting up as well who I was trying to convince her to go to bed. And she said, okay, I will, but will I get room service? Right. And I said, oh, yes, you will. And then I just had to pretend it was a hotel.
Oh, man.
And like take her a cup of tea.
You know? wow.
It was stuff like that, which, again, I guess you don't realize how strange that is when you're doing it, right? It's only in hindsight now. It's, you know, it's been ages since I've done any proper work, really.
Catherine Lutz, who spent time on the island, made some interesting observations on Faygo. She said this. Faygo speaks to the sense that life is fragile, that connections to others both are precious and may be severed through death or travel, that love may equal loss. Faygo is uttered in recognition of the suffering that is everywhere and in the spirit of a vigorous optimism that human effort, most especially in the form of caring for others, can control its ravages. So basically, she talks about kindness in the face of pain, which I suppose is a good example of the compassion / love / sadness Venn diagram of emotions that makes up Faygo. And I should say Faygo is more than a fleeting feeling. It could be described as a key part of your personality. You might be a person filled with Faygo. The Ifaluk people, a mostly matriarchal society, valued Faygo as an important emotion to have, to make sure that society runs smoothly. Bilal and I talked about the responsibility of looking after someone's happiness levels, not only caring for them in a practical sense, but looking after their well-being. And also, how did it affect him? He mentioned that if patients were clearly unhappy there, it was difficult not to be moved by it. So I asked if there were any moments in particular that affected him.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that, so like this is what's been a bit hard about doing the show is that I don't want it to be a sad show.
Yeah.
A lot of people do Edinburgh shows where they want people to cry and stuff, and I don't want that. But there's certain things that I'm not including because they are too sad. Like around Christmas time, so I don't really celebrate Christmas. So on Christmas Day, I would work and it would be double pay,
mm-hmm.
Which was nice. But it was, the home was like overstaffed because there was too many of us. So then my job became just hanging out with the people who had no visitors.
Oh,
I know. And
oh,
that was,
God.
I know, sorry. That was really sad because like you could see residents sitting down and seeing people have their like great, great grandkids and stuff visit. And they had no one.
Oh yeah.
Which is, I don't know. I don't understand that, but I don't understand how that can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, but We had that a lot. I mean, there was a lady who, like, her, I think she had to be moved from the home and put in, like, a council one because her son owed the care home, like, literally tens of thousands.
Wow, okay.
And he'd run off, apparently to, like, Australia. That was, like, the rumour.
Right.
So he'd just gone, and she owed all this money. So then, I don't know what even happens with that. I guess they just have to write that off.
Yeah.
But it's all a bit weird, isn't it? It's weird how this thing is a big business as well.
I find care homes a bit fascinating. Optimistically, I always think they're hopefully going to be a bit like university halls, but just when you're older. Yeah. I really want it to be like that, but I suspect my optimism has got the best of me there.
Yeah, yeah. I say on my show that I, like, when I was, because I was so young, I didn't really know what a care home was, and I thought it was a bit like school, like where you just have to go when you're a certain age. I didn't, you know.
It's a nice way of looking at it. Was there one person that, like, or a couple of people there that you kind of bonded with as maybe staff or maybe the people in there?
Yeah, I mean, staff, not that much. Really. I know they're all right, but, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's, in my show, I talk about a guy called Barry, who was very nice and very sort of quite funny, but he was completely blind. He was going deaf. He was in a wheelchair and he was on this oxygen machine.
Wow.
So it's very, very unwell. And when I was first introduced to him, because it was in the north, how they people pronounce my name, they said, Barry, this is Bilal. Mm-hmm. And he said, Al. And we said, no, Bilal. And he said, Al. And we said, yeah, fine. You know?
Yeah,
so
sure.
He just called me Al the whole time. And there were even, I found out that because people like gossip a lot. I mean, I made the mistake of when I just started doing stand-up of telling everyone I did it.
Oh, rookie error.
Yeah, I know. Not. I didn't like tell the residents and stuff, but like other carers had told mm-hmm. some of them. So then Barry would like, there was a period of time where he was sort of telling me jokes.
Oh.
And I didn't know why. And it turned out it's because he was kind of trying to help me out. I mean, the first time he did... Okay, right, I'll tell you one of the jokes, right?
Go for it, yeah.
This actually happened. I was doing a night shift. And see, this is completely true. This, like, it might seem like I even made it up. But, like, everyone had these buzzer things. So we had these, like, beepers.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone was in trouble, they'd press this pendant thing they had around their neck. And we'd have to rush over because, you know, they could have fallen or be in mm-hmm. trouble, you know. And he did that, and it was literally like 3 a.m. And I panicked and went in. And he said, Al. I went, yeah. I was like, are you all right? And he said, yeah, I'm fine. He said, are you all right? And I said, yeah. And he said, no, you're not. And I didn't understand what he meant. And he said, you're not all right because some of you is left.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
I know. And I was like, what? Because... you know, I was sort of panicking for his health at the time. And I was like, what? And he was laying on his bed and he kind of showed me with his hand, like he kind of drew an imaginary line on the wall. Like, you are not all right.
Oh,
some
man.
Of you is left. And I was like, are you telling me a joke?
That is a proper dad joke, isn't it? Oh my God.
It really
God.
Is.
But like the last time you want to hear it when you're like, oh my God, I'm panicking. Are you okay? And he's just there like, I've got this joke in the middle of the night. I must tell Al. Like, oh
yeah.
God. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And were you just like, time, cool, like, thanks, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, I just sort of said goodnight. But at that time, I didn't know that he knew that I had just started doing the open mics. So I didn't know why this had happened.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you about this because this emotion that I'm kind of researching, it has this feeling about it where you kind of, you know, you're looking after someone, but you know it's going to end, whether that means obviously the person passing away or the person leaving you, or you leaving them. And I guess if you knew you had comedy going on in the background, were you always there thinking, I can get through this because I know this isn't forever?
Yeah, I've had that for a while, really. I had that with all my day jobs, which even looking back now, it's kind of weird having that much optimism
mm-hmm.
that, like, especially because stand-up is so competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of decided I was going to do it and be good at it and have it as a job one day. So I had that with with the care home job, I was never going to stay there forever. Like there wasn't, I think I did it for like a year. There was never going to be any progression. And the ways to get more money were an extra 50p an hour if I did like the, gave out medication.
Right.
And you needed to go through all this training for that. And genuinely, right, this is the sort of thing that happened with medicine. And I'm not even putting this in the show because it's too stupid. I was sort of helping one of the carers with the medicine thing. And I had to wake a resident up and to give him medicine. And when I checked what medicine it was a sleeping pill.
Oh, my God.
I know. But you have to do that.
Oh, God. Yeah. There must be so many checks and balances. And you're like, this is ridiculous. What am I doing this for? This makes no sense.
Yeah. And so I didn't bother for the extra 50p, you know.
So I'm going to be honest. I'm not sure I could work in a care home. Not only am I wildly impractical, I'd also spend the whole time very nervous of doing something wrong, of kind of breaking one of the people in there. It's not that I don't understand FAGO, but maybe I'm a bit nervous of it. It comes with an implied responsibility. So I was impressed with Bilal for stepping into this job, especially when he was so young. I think when I was his age in London, I was just trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I was older. I still don't know, in case you're wondering. And he seemed to get a lot out of it. He mentioned that some of his favourite moments were bonding with a group of older ladies, helping them fill in their crosswords and remembering exactly how they take their tea. One drop of milk for some, extra sugar for others. Of course, the fact he remembered these details delighted them. So finally, I wondered whether it changes the way he treats people now, and also how he approaches his comedy career.
Something that was a bit weird for me, which I don't even know if I'm putting this in the show, but it's like, culturally, we wouldn't put our parents in a care home.
Right.
Like, unless we... I should say, like, I don't think every single person that puts relatives in a care home is evil. It's not that at all. Like, some people do need a lot of care. Mm-hmm. Like this Barry guy, for example, like, he needed, like, 24-hour care. You can't... I totally understand that. But there were some people who just seemed absolutely fine. And it was a bit weird. Yeah. And sometimes you'd see them deteriorate in the care home. Like, they would start getting very forgetful and stuff.
Yeah.
It was weird. I guess that was one of the weird things for me, is, like, it's just... It's kind of a very alien world to me. Although there is, I have seen more and more sort of Asian or whatever families have started using care homes. Mm-hmm. But before, it was never a thing. It was like, you absolutely don't do that. Like, you'd have, if you have your own family and stuff, you'd have an old relative stay with
you. Yeah, live with you. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is not, I mean, you know, I understand that's not attractive, but it's the idea of putting them in this place. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I get to be honest, I think doing this kind of work has made me just appreciate kind of my career now a lot more. Mm-hmm, like, because mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of comedians who, like, have got, like, quite wealthy parents that have helped them out and stuff. And I've never had that at all. You know, I've not had that privilege. So it's like I've always had to fund myself in whatever I do. So, like, the fact now that I can do stuff on Twitch and, like tonight I'm doing a stream where we're watching... I'm doing a watch-along of Eurovision 1973.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
We're going through all of them.
Okay.
Going through all of them. And, like, the fact that I'm going to make money doing that tonight is ridiculous, you know?
But, hey...
When I compare it to what I was doing before.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It does make you appreciate it even more, doesn't it? That's the best thing. And so tell me, before I let you go, well, first of all, I was going to say, I bet those old ladies absolutely loved you. I bet they were like, this young man... is giving us the tea we need and he's talking to us. And oh my God, I bet they were gutted when you left. But yeah, tell me where your show is in Edinburgh and what time it's on.
It's at the Underbelly Bristow Square. I think the venue is called Jersey, but yeah, in the Bristow Square area. It's called Care. It's at 5:30 p.m. almost every day.
I find the concept of FAGO fascinating and the place where it comes from even more so, especially as it's somewhere so far away from my patch of land and yet it's so relatable. I've absolutely no doubt I will visit Ifaluk in another podcast soon because I think there's so much more to discover from them. For example, not only do they know how much of a big deal it is to care for another person, they also understand it's not always easy. It's a mixture of thoughts and feelings. It's love. It's compassion. It's pity. It's sadness when it doesn't go well. It's understanding that it's a temporary arrangement, whether good or bad. It's knowing how to make someone feel safe and protected. And it's remembering exactly how they take their tea. This was Getting Emotional, and that was FAGO.
big thank you to Bilal for chatting to me about his time working in the care home. Like he said, his show is going to be on at the Edinburgh Festival all through August. Also, you can catch him on Twitter, at Zaffarcakes, that's Z-A-F-A-R cakes. You can see me there as well, at Get Emotional Pod, and you can find me on Instagram, at Getting Emotional Podcast. So no excuse not to get in touch. See you soon.